Welcome to episode 43 of Comic Book Nation, the official podcast of comicbook.com. I am your host, Kofi Outlaw, and with me on the couch today is my co-host, Matthew Aguilar.
What up?
And in one of our rare carryovers from the previous episode, we are bringing back one of our WWE champions, Mr. Connor Casey.
I'm back.
And we're bringing him back mostly for a little mea culpa because he and Matt teased in our last episode the upcoming WWE Stomping Grounds, and they weren't very enthusiastic about this whole tease, but it turned out Stomping Grounds was pretty good, pretty entertaining. So we're going to have you guys come back, eat some crow, and tell us why you were wrong and Stomping Grounds was so good. I'm just kidding. We're just going to break down all the matches and all the results, but we're going to do more than that today. We have a lot to get to. We have two new films to review, Child's Play and Annabelle Comes Home in a horror theme. We're going to be talking a little bit of Marvel because we're going to be talking about the Avengers Endgame re-release in theaters. And there are some films that are going to be coming up that kind of bring back some popular franchises that we're going to be discussing. So stay tuned for that. All right. You like how I just hooked that at the end? I just hooked it at the end?
I tried to play.
And if you were watching, you can see that I am sporting our Comic Book Nation official t-shirt. You know, we could say a lot of things about the perks of this company, but one thing we can never say is that we do not have really fly apparel.
That's
we
a get boss really, t-shirt, man.
Yeah, we get really good t-shirts. Like, yeah.
That's my favorite shirt that we have.
An elite team overseas was sewing this stuff. It wasn't just the usual... It wasn't the usual shift. We get the elite shift to make these clothes. So, no, I mean...
Not touching that one.
Yeah, we're going to read some reviews. And if you guys... I mean, if you can see this, this shirt's pretty awesome. This Comic Book Nation shirt. So we're going to read some reviews and show you guys, give some people a chance to
get one. For those of you who can't see it, but do see the album art for the podcast, just think of the Comic Book Nation logo on a very nice either heather gray, dark heather gray, or a darker black shirt, and then you will see the shirt that Kofi's wearing.
Is that the color? Is Heather gray?
That one is the darker one.
Yes, this is the darker one.
We have a lighter one.
Very nice.
Makes me think of a Frasier episode.
Oh boy. Anyway, here we go. So you just
what did I do? 95% of our audiences are can only listen to this. You've got to describe the shirt.
And I applauded.
No, I said, I'm not saying that about your description. I'm talking about him throwing me off.
It was the Frasier reference.
Yeah. Just completely knocked me out.
When he's talking about his carpet, he's like, oh, I have like five.
No, Jim Viscardi's very soothing pitch was very good. Yeah. But the Frasier thing.
It was apt.
Keep that stuff to yourself. We're not talking Frasier. We're gonna be talking about some other stuff. So let's get started. Avengers Endgame, headed back into theaters this week. I was a little ahead of myself last week. I kept thinking last week was this week. I was writing stuff for Annabelle Comes Home, like, to come out, and that's this week. I'm, like, thinking Avengers is back.
Just zoomed right past Toy Story.
Yeah, I did. I mean, you know, I made that clear that I was going to do
did.
That.
You did.
Yeah, so Avengers Endgame is headed back into theaters this week, and we were up here debating and kind of even writing pieces on comicbook.com about, like, what this re-release would be. Would it be worth it? What would be kind of... There were things that were going to get deleted scenes at the end of the movie, a tribute to Stan Lee, but there was going to be also a nice little surprise that Marvel Studios head Kevin Feige teased. But now we confirm that it is what, you know, our lamest option that we thought would be on the table, which would be... What's that?
Just the worst.
Yeah, just the lamest, which would be a preview of Spider-Man Far From Home, which comes out, like, in a couple days anyway.
Which I feel like we've seen a ton already.
Yeah, I mean, we're on TV spot, like, 26 right now. So, like, in clips and clips and clips. So we're not, like, exactly in the dark about this. So the question is, now that we know, we're not going to spend too much time on this, but now that we know what it is, has it changed your opinions? Because I think, I mean, you, Matt, I know your opinion. You were like, I'm not helping Marvel beat Avatar. James Cameron forever, I believe was your quote.
I think that was verbatim what I said.
But Connor, you were saying you had incentive, like me, you said you had incentive to go back out and see this. So I'm just kind of curious, has your opinion changed?
Not really. I'll still go to it.
Me too. Bam, there it is. Yeah.
Like I said before, I kept getting told, hey, it works better the second time you see it. If my only reason is, hey, I want it to beat Avatar, that works too.
I mean, there you go.
I mean,
and
it's
I'm
not
on the
just
same boat.
That either.
So, if...
How upset are you going to be when it
It's a deleted scene, too.
No, I think the push this weekend could do it. I mean, it could just give it enough legs to, if not this weekend...
It won't do it this week.
No, not this week, but it will be enough of a push to help the kind of, you know, last legs of it.
Just lessen the amount the Kevin Feige has to personally buy?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's got the money, so it's not
more
that
conspiracy
much.
Theories.
What? Studios buying tickets is a time-honored tradition.
I mean, you got to make up 38 mil. You do what you got to do.
Yeah. Yeah, you do what you got to do. And to hold the branding power of number one, like, movie franchise in the world of all time.
That's some
like
cachet.
That.
Yeah, that's,
yeah, so you need to do that. And when we do it, we'll know that it was, you know, true warriors like me and Connor who made it happen. But hey, man, Captain Marvel Blu-ray, buddy.
I'll watch the unfinished Hulk scene later.
What if that crowd that like wanted everyone to go see Alita, comes out and like, you know, just goes and I don't know.
It didn't help that movie.
Were you saying they would balance the scales again? Yeah. Like they would, yeah, somehow.
All right. We're not going to get too deep down the rabbit hole. We're going to be talking about this. We'll see where Avengers Endgame is when we come back next week for next week's episode. See how close we are to beating Avatar. But yeah, Connor and I will be going out to help the support effort.
Well, so what do you think it's going to do this weekend?
I mean, I give it like 15, 20.
15?
15 to 20.
15 to 20?
Yeah.
I'm going to say...
I don't think it clears 10.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm 10 to 15. 15 high, but I'm around 10.
I think it'll be an initial push this weekend, and then once... If we can get it in, like, 10 million or less range, like, then people will really kind of get hungry to go out and maybe push us over the line. But you're pulling us back. We're moving forward. We're going to move from Avengers on to, like I said, there are a couple big names in movie franchises that are trying to make a return. We've gotten reports this week. And we're going to start with the first one of them, one of the biggest ones of the 2000s, The Matrix. So we've been hearing about a Matrix 4 or a Matrix reboot for so many years. But in the last couple years, we keep getting these little snippets that say from people who are like working in or around the Wachowski brothers or people who worked around people who worked with them, kind of hinting that we're getting a new Matrix and that they are... I said Wachowski brothers. I'm sorry, the Wachowskis.
I was gonna say they're not brothers anymore.
Yeah, I know. Thank you. Thank you about the update. I was still thinking in the 2000s. I'm sorry. Things have changed. But the Wachowskis are working on a new Matrix, and that, you know, now we're hearing details like writer Zach Penn could be handling the script, and that this will be kind of a reboot, and that Michael B. Jordan could star. Now, this still hasn't been confirmed by like Warner Brothers or anybody, but the mentions have included like people like John Wick director Chad Stahelski, who said it. And now, like, yeah, people have just kind of been talking, and people aren't like denying it so much as they are. Like, Zach Penn's not denying it, but he's just kind of like not talking about it, which is sometimes, you know, the best kind of acknowledgement.
The non-answer.
Non-answer is the answer. So we're waiting to hear this, but just to kind of kick this topic off, do you guys want to see the Matrix concept? And when Zach Penn did answer, he said, don't think of it as like a sequel or like a reboot. He said, watch things like the Animatrix and the comics that the Wachowski did about it and kind of put your head in that space, which is just another way of exploring that world. Because the Animatrix, which is one of my favorite like animated short anthologies of all time. Really great. Like, I was blown away when I went home and put that in because I wasn't expecting much. And I was like, it's just going to be like some cheap stuff. Like, it's going to be crap. And then, like, yeah, from the first little, you know, vignette all the way through, like, it was just a really good exploration of the Matrix concept and that whole thing. And so I kind of more want to see something like that, like something that isn't enslaved to the franchise that we have, but allows you to play in that world and explore different concepts and like things you can do within that world. Like, one of my favorite was the track runner from Animatrix, the guy who's like running the track meet, and as he's like pushing himself so hard physically, he begins to crack and see that he's like in the Matrix and stuff like that. Like, things like that were
love super, the art design on that one.
Yeah, that was like super. I think that one was like Aeon Flux kind of animation, if I remember correctly. But yeah, super interesting stuff that you can do with this concept. So I'd be down for something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm down for that. I also don't mind, you know, more things that like surround the three movies as far as like pieces of time or whatever. But we see what other characters were doing during that kind of overall thing. Like, I, as much as the game part of it kind of sucked. I loved Enter the Matrix.
I actually loved Enter the Matrix. I really the dug game, it. The fight mechanics, bullet time were awesome.
I really liked it. I played the whole thing.
And the cutscenes and how it tied into the film. Like, it really made...
It was cool.
Look, I'll be the first to admit, when the Matrix, like, the second two came out, I was actually living down here in Nashville, where we may or may not record and be housed. And
I gotta make it weird.
Come on,
just to keep people unsure, you know, I gotta keep the kind of keep the mystery. But I was so deep into this world. Like, I was so deep into it. Cause I think I was in college when 2 came out, and I had just gotten out of college and moved down here when 3 hit. The Enter the Matrix came out, and I wasn't doing much. I was like working at Green Hills Movie Theater and just going home and like so deep into my Matrix world playing Enter the Matrix. Love that.
My PlayStation, by the way, during that time was on its last legs, but I was trying to, because I had already bought the game and then it started dying, so I tilted my PlayStation up vertically, leaning on a thing of books so that it would catch, the spinner would catch, and so that's how I played that whole game, just waiting. I was like, I need to save before my console dies.
Man, yeah.
Yeah, that was me.
But like, so something like that, like, yeah, Enter the Matrix, good concept or something, so you would take like an interquel, something that kind of...
Yeah.
Had to do with the other films, but like on a side story.
Yeah, exactly. Because, like, I mean, there's enough meat to that world to see. I mean, what do you think?
I think it needs to get away from the stink of the sequels, especially the third one. Like, you mentioned this not being necessarily a sequel or a reboot. My thought was make it a sequel that is essentially a reboot, because the whole gimmick that we learned in the second one is that the Matrix is just a repeat of this same cycle over and over. And Neo's like the sixth one, the sixth. One, quote unquote, to do this. So why not have Michael B. Jordan be the seventh or be one of the earlier versions?
That's the kind of thing I'm kind of worried about, being trapped in back into that storyline, because it was, they didn't quite stick the landing of that whole, like, I'm Superman of fantasy world.
Right. But how can you up the stakes with a side story, essentially? If we already know that this simulation, we know what it is, we know how it ends. And we know the stakes that it's left with by the time the end of the third movie, it's going to be kind of hard to get the stakes up again.
That's a good point.
Well, I think
compared to the last
one, the only two things that make the Matrix unique is, I think you have to remember that the real thrill of the first one that kind of made the second two or the two sequels really challenging was the first one. The real hook was watching all these people kind of learn how to manipulate the Matrix and kind of access these powers. And not just Neo, but like Trinity, Morpheus, all these people who could kind of manipulate the Matrix and do all these things. But in the sequels, it became so obsolete because Neo and the agents and everybody became so powerful that it was just like, Morpheus and Trinity having a fight just means they die.
Yeah, Neo really didn't have a threat until the last battle with Smith.
Exactly. And like in throughout too, it's just like him flying around. It's just like his threat was too far away to like get there in time and save everybody. He was just Superman. And so, like, the second part is Matrix in 2 and in 3 especially kind of puts together the idea that, like, what Neo is doing isn't just him, but it's this, like, you know, the whole fatalism thing that runs through it is all these little parts have to happen for everybody. Like, the Enter the Matrix stuff has to happen, and Nairobi just arrives just in the nick of time. And, like, that whole thing, like, on the highway chase where she catches him on the hood of the car, like, in the game, you have to figure out how challenging and how close that actually is and for Morpheus not to splatter all over the highway and for her to catch
him. Really cool. They're really cool.
Yeah, and it's like, it's like a program, so everything has to kind of click, and it would be kind of... So I say all that to say, if you were to go back to, like, the first one or something like that and see somebody like Michael B. Jordan learning just to do cool stuff, not necessarily in the same way that like Neo did or other people did, but to access and mess with the Matrix and be like a really good fighter or stuff. Sorry. And then do something that actually you didn't know, but was so crucial to kind of making everything else click into place and to help Neo do whatever. Like, that would be kind of cool.
That work. What they cannot do, which was, I heard the rumor that this was originally what they were trying to do, was a Morpheus prequel.
Yeah, well,
where Michael B. Jordan is a young Morpheus. I have zero interest.
Oh, please don't do that.
Yeah. I'm with you.
Yeah, you lose me about that. Yeah, I don't want to see that. So let's just leave it at that. Let's do something interesting. Let's not do
just
that.
Just don't do that.
Yep.
Okay. But we won't do that. All right. Some meatloaf for you. All right. Moving right along. Taika Waititi, man who has been burning up the charts ever since he kind of broke out with Thor Ragnarok. He's been taking on, I mean, this man is not backing down for some challenges. Like, he is a glutton for punishment, or just, you know, the best kind of savant who has plan, like, you know, Phil Lord, Chris Miller type plans for things. Because he's taking on an Akira adaptation, which we've talked about on the show. No pressure there.
Yeah, for real.
And since he wasn't, like, you know, that wasn't enough of a challenge, he was like, you know what? I'm going to get in there, and I'm going to handle and kind of shepherd this Flash Gordon animated movie. So, Flash Gordon is one of the biggest kind of iconic cult hit movies of all time. Getting an animated movie kind of being shepherded by Taika Waititi. I like this because it just boggles the mind as to what this guy could do with the Flash Gordon concept. Because you know it's not going to be like straight up. It's not going to be like straight up literal just no, Flash no. Gordon. Like, he's going to do something.
Do we need an animated Flash Gordon, take on Flash Gordon?
No, of course not, but we're going to get one.
Absolutely not. That's the point, though. But, like, Taika Waititi, I feel like, was one of two people besides, like, Phil, like Chris Miller and Phil Lord who could take that thing that you'd be like, nobody freaking needs this and turn it into something.
I would rather see Taika Waititi do something Flash Gordon-like on his own as opposed to just
do the Flash Gordon. I mean, I would just like him to do the live action movie. I know, but like, just do that. I don't necessarily need to see an animated thing. I do think, though, what'll probably happen is if this actually becomes like a real thing and it actually comes out, it'll probably be really entertaining. Yeah. like
he's gonna mess with the whole Flash Gordon.
Yeah, it's gonna be fun.
Like concept.
Like no one's too attached to the Flash Gordon mythos. He can kind of do whatever he wants with this.
I mean, I'm sure there are a couple out there.
The vast majority of people are like, wait, that was the thing from the Queen song, right? Like, I think that song is more well-known in this generation than the movie.
Yeah, and Ted is why.
I was going to say, Flash Ted's
Gordon
the other one.
Is what, Ted is why Flash Ted's Gordon lives one. On. Seth MacFarlane's love of Flash Gordon. True. But I hope that Taika, like, brings Sam J. Jones in to, like, voice Flash
Gordon. Oh, yeah. No, he's got to do that.
Yeah, you got to do that. And has him just saying, because that's my favorite thing about the Ted movies is not just that they bring Sam J. Jones in, but they bring him in and have him do, like, this absurd caricature of himself.
It's just like, to me.
Coked out, you know, Hollywood cult hit star.
That's what we really need, another Ted.
Yeah,
I mean, two was just okay.
Oh, but I want a Ted 3.
Yeah, so I mean, I trust Taika to do something really funny and crazy, maybe even just kind of lampooning these whole like 80s cult hit movies with their crazy effects and stuff like that and their absurdness. That'd be really fun. I mean, like, look what he did with What We Do in the Shadows for like vampire movies.
True.
Like, the man knows how to, and even Thor, he kind of turned Thor on its head and like completely transformed that into a comedy that's also a pretty deep story about immigration. Yeah. Like, it'll
greatly depend, though, on the animation style.
Oh, like, yeah. Oh,
that,
yeah.
That's going to honestly be the big thing that is going, can I sit through an hour and 45 minutes of that looking like that? Like, animated movies live and die on that, I feel like, even if they're great stories and characters, sometimes animation just sucks.
And I kind of want to tap him on the shoulder and be like, maybe you should just flip concepts. Like, maybe you should do an Akira animated movie in like a live action.
I feel like that makes that challenge even harder.
Akira?
It's like, yeah, doing, it's like, hey, everyone loves the anime. Try it again.
Well, that's, I mean, yeah, that one though, that property, I feel like he's just, it doesn't matter what type of movie you make that. Like, it's, there's pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter.
All right, so I think here's it's going to be
a... Can Taika burn all of his goodwill if both of those movies bomb?
I don't know. The Flash Gordon, I don't think it'll affect it whatsoever.
Then he's two
because
for four.
None of them are mainstream enough. I think, like, if Thor 4 sucked, like, yeah, that's a different story. But, I mean, you know, I think if you were to burn both of these, there's still that fourth Thor 4. Pull you out of director jail.
I think Akira is a blemish, though, if... Like, it's...
Oh, I mean...
It's a... Like, that one...
If it's, like, it's culturally offensive, then yes. But if it's just a passing movie...
Then, yeah.
I think people might just forget.
And I think the impact will be limited to a very niche audience who will be angry about it.
Yeah, people are still talking about Ghost in the Shell.
Are they?
Are they, though?
People still talk about...
I keep forgetting that movie happened.
Avatar,
right?
I don't think the major mainstream movie audience even recognizes that Ghost in the Shell happened. So, like, yeah, I don't know about that. But, all right, moving on to our third film, that could be making a comeback. Danny Boyle recently revealed, you know, Danny Boyle, who has directed things like 127 Hours, almost directed James Bond 25, till that all went to down the crapper. he has revealed, but, like, one of the things that really put Danny Boyle on the map, besides things like Trainspotting, was his kind of breakout late 90s, early 2000s, I forget exactly which year it came out, film 28 Days Later. And he has revealed that he and Alex Garland actually have the idea for a 28 Days Later 3, because if you remember, it was 28 Days Later, and then the next film was 28 Weeks Later, which had Hawkeye himself, Jeremy Renner.
2002 is when that first one came out.
2002, yeah. I knew it was right around there, because I was in college when it came out. And that movie, oof, like, yeah, we all think we live through, like, the zombie resurgence now, but, like, man, 28 Days Later, such a freaky movie. Like, so, I don't think zombies have ever been scarier than in that franchise. Because if you don't remember your zombie history, these were the fast-running zombies.
This was the first of the fast zombies.
Yeah.
Which are always creepier to me than...
Oh, man. Yeah. And
easy.
And this, like, the rage, like, the thing, they just call it rage, and it's just, like... Yeah, I mean, it's great because nobody has to bite you. It's like you get splattered with some blood, and it's like a real infectious disease almost. Like Danny Boyle imagined this as like a real mass outbreak. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, if you get some blood in your eye, like poor, what's his name, Brendan Gleeson gets in his eye in the first film. Like, yeah, you instantly transform. It's not like you die and then you eventually get back up 3 minutes later. No, it's like a 30-second process. And that's the messed up thing about 28 Days Later is, like, when they have to make the decision, like, somebody gets infected, you literally have, like, one minute.
Yeah, you have a split second to...
Before they just turn into an incredibly fast-moving, adrenaline-pumped rage monster.
And if you don't make that choice, you're probably dead.
Yeah, you're probably dead. Yeah. And, like, that's one of my favorite things is Naomi Harris, like, in the kitchen where somebody gets, like, when they're early on, when somebody gets bit, she just turns around and her friend and just immediately just to death. And you're like, whoa! But 28 Weeks Later wasn't as strong, but really freaky. But, like, yeah, the end of that movie suggested that, you know, it isn't contained because the little boy, that whole movie is freaky because they're trying to get out of London before it gets cleansed and firebombed. And Imogen Poots and her little brother escape, but he's a kind of recessive carrier of the disease. So it doesn't make him a rage monster, but he still has it.
Yeah.
And that was, like, the whole hook of that story is he gets it like his mom does. So now there's a chance that this gets out. And, like, yeah, I would love to see something on the scale of, like, you know, what is it, 28 weeks, 28 days, 28 weeks, 28 months later.
28 years.
28, oh, man, wow. Yeah, 28 years later.
I'm
yeah.
fighting you for that copyright.
And, something like World War Z should have been, right? But, like, with just, like, crazy rage monsters everywhere or
but without
dying
the,
out.
Building the giant hill. Out of each other.
Yeah.
God, exactly. The anthill.
This is something, I mean, this, just to be clear, like, this is just an idea, and they're just putting it out in press right now. Nobody's really, like, this isn't in development, this isn't greenlit, but we're reporting on it because we want it to happen. Like, I want this next movie. Like, screw this zombie, like, era. I want the real
but
stuff
back.
But
that's the thing, I guess that's the most interesting thing to me, is that I feel like not too long ago, we were talking, like, not necessarily us three, but, like, society and, like, the genre of fans overall, we're talking like we're kind of done. Like, we're over the zombie apocalypse. We're over dystopian futures. We're over like that because we had so much of it. I mean, from The Walking Dead and all these other spinoffs and all these other, you know, wannabes that kind of came out around that same time. So there's a part of me that's like, I'm surprised by just how much people are like, yeah, let's get another one. I kind of thought everyone was ready for a break.
Well, the thing about it is you have to come to the zombie subgenre with a different take. And this series had one of those, which is why I got so much excitement in the first place and why a third installment could do the same thing.
Yeah.
And I think Danny Boyle is good at mixing genre and art. 28 Days Later was also so good because it was so low budget looking, shot on like a handheld a lot. But the scenes of just London being empty and cleared out.
The subway scene.
Stuff, the subway.
It's black.
Yeah, like all of that stuff was so well shot and so well done. And it didn't carry over necessarily to the sequel. But if he were to come back and do this again with Alex Garland, that'd be a real powerhouse team up. So, and I think the story they tell would be like modern and relevant. And there's a lot to tell. I mean, just with like the amount of conflicts, refugee, humanitarian crises going on all over the world.
No real world parallels at all.
Yeah, no, like there's some good ways to make this a really great film. So I'm campaigning and I hope this happens. All right, so that's our trying to influence the industry 5 minutes there. Stay tuned because when we return, we are going to be reviewing new horror releases, Child's Play and Annabelle Comes Home. And Matt and Connor are going to take us through the results of WWE Stomping Grounds and I guess a little bit of what's happened on Raw since then. All right, so be sure to stay tuned for that.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Okay, so here's where we're going to try to make up some time, because I'm going to give you guys some quick spoiler-free reviews. I saw both Child's Play and Annabelle Comes Home, and did the reviews that are now up on comicbook.com, where you can read both of them in our horror section. But basically, I gave Child's Play a 2 and Annabelle Comes Home a 2.5. And for some longtime fans of the franchise, for Annabelle, I would say 3. Here's kind of my breakdown, because they're kind of similar. My breakdown for both films is kind of similar. And it's this. Like, both Child's Play and Annabelle are two horror movies that start off and build up in the first two acts actually surprisingly well. Better than I thought. For Child's Play, what you get is this kind of interesting new take on Chucky that creates a kind of almost like Ex Machina story where Chucky is this smart doll that's basically had all the normal restrictions removed. And so he's not inherently evil. He's just has the potential to learn without any kind of safeguards as an artificial intelligence. And because of what this kid's life is and the circumstances he's in and what he enjoys and just normal, you know, our normal psychopathic human behavior every day, like watching horror movies and stuff,
yeah,
of people getting hacked up and laughing about it. Like, this smart toy begins to learn all these messed up behaviors from you know, the humans around him, mm-hmm. which is an interesting take on Tucky, mm-hmm. On Chucky. Where it falls apart is in the end where Chucky goes full Chucky and becomes evil, because that only really worked in the original because Brad Dourif played such a really good kind of sadistic, maniacal serial killer hiding in a doll's body. And when he finally has to expose himself, like, it's freaky because, yeah, there's a serial killer with a serial killer's personality doing this, and it all makes sense. By the time Chucky is deciding to cut off heads and just wholesale murder people, that film, I mean, Child's Play really jumps the shark because it doesn't feel organic or like an organic development of the character.
Yeah.
Like a conflicted doll, kind of doing this stuff because it's learning like the wrong behaviors is one thing. Yeah, but when it's a mall in the final set piece and he's trying to kill everybody in the mall just to do evil, like, yeah, I mean, then it falls apart. And Mark Hamill does a great job as a creepy Chucky, like a Chuck in the doll, like making the doll smile and like being for your face at weird times. And Hamill's great about kind of creating this voice that sounds almost like disembodied from like whatever person it's supposed to be in. And it just sounds so offbeat and weird when it talks to you. Hmm. And so like Chucky creeps you out. But when he's just going full murderous Chucky, it's just like a Joker, kind of almost like a Joker rehash. And it's just over the top. And like the whole end scene, like I started literally like falling asleep when I was watching the movie because it was just like mindless carnage. There's just you know, it just kind of falls apart. Annabelle Comes Home is similar in that vein, in that it begins, there's actually really well drawn, one of the best teen characters in horror movies I've seen in a long time. There's actual motivations for, like, why they're home alone, these teens, why one of them goes in the room and does the dumb thing of getting Annabelle out of the case. They create an actual strong emotional narrative around all this and around the Warren's daughter, making her kind of pushing her in the spotlight of the franchise. And all of that is good. There's even a funny guy who's, like, in love with the babysitter, and he's a funny, hilarious kind of comedic character, newcomer actor,
yeah,
who shows up. He's called, his name is Bob Got Balls, and I'll let you figure out why in the movie. It's not gross. I promise. It's not as gross as you think.
How is it not?
Because it's a running gag.
Thank you.
It's a running gag of the movie. It's a running gag of the movie about why this kid is, like, referred to as Bob Got Balls. And when you figure it out, it's actually pretty funny.
Okay, sure.
So Annabelle, in, like, the whole premise of her getting into the doll, infecting this room of the Warrens, and basically demon Avengers in, yeah, like, a house, is good, and it's creepy most of the time. Until you get to the final act and to the ending, in which case, like, this is a rated R horror film, but it's surprisingly tame and has very little actual teeth to it when it comes to, like, not scares, but, like, actual hurting people, injury, like, yeah, real consequences and oomph. Like, there's not so much of that.
So, like, it feels like a PG-13
movie. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It feels like Avengers and Babysitting got really intense one night, as opposed to, like, a traumatic event where a demon,
yeah,
creates, like, supernatural havoc in a house. And so I was kind of disappointed by how tame it actually turns out to be. And it's done by the writer of the entire Annabelle trilogy and the guy who wrote The Nun. So I was surprised because, you know, all the past installments of these movies, I mean, they definitely have, like, a lot of death and carnage and,
yeah,
some really freaky moments. So I was kind of disappointed by how tame this one was. But, like I said, for a lot of it, the actual scares and using the different kind of demons is kind of entertaining and very creepy. And there are some really good kind of inventive scares in it. So 2/3 of it are really good. Disappointing ending. And the same thing could be said for Child's Play. If you had to compare the two, I would say absolutely go see Annabelle over Child's Play. You're going to have a much better experience. But, yeah, that's it for me.
It's almost like, yeah, they should have swapped endings.
Right. So do neither rank particularly high in their respective franchises?
I would say that Annabelle Comes Home is in the middle of the Annabelle trilogy. It's better than the first one, which was just, like, this really muddled and kind of slow-moving mess. But it's nowhere near as good as the sequel, Annabelle Creation, which is, like, one of the freakiest and well-done horror movies I've seen in the last few years. Child's Play, I would say, ironically, I was talking to Chris Killian here. I would say Child's Play would have been so much better if it was just an original sci-fi horror movie about a boy trying to, like, befriend this malfunctioned, yeah, smart doll. Sure. Or a great Black Mirror episode would have been really great about how technology isn't corrupted on its own. Like, it takes us and,
yeah,
all our crap to kind of feed into, you know, our children, essentially technology. We just bring all our crap and kind of corrupt them. That would have been an interesting Black Mirror episode. The weakest thing about it is trying to attach the Child's Play name to it and making people expect this legacy of Chucky and this.
Because if they hadn't killed anybody, people would be like, no, like, he's gotta kill something.
I mean,
he's gotta kill somebody, right?
Yeah, I mean, it is. That's not even it. Like, he definitely kills somebody. Yeah. But the reasoning for why he starts to kill somebody makes sense. It has to do with, like, you know, Andy and, like, bad things that are happening in his life, yeah, and arguably abusive things, that Chucky's solution to this is, oh, and he, like, hears the kid, you know, crying and lamenting, and it's, oh, something's hurting Andy, and the best way to solve that is to remove this thing that's hurting him. It gets, when he just decides, it's when he has a falling out with Andy and then goes full berserk,
yeah,
that it really stops.
You don't see the jump.
Sense.
Yeah, yeah, you don't see that. Okay.
That makes sense. That's what I would say.
Interesting.
It'd have been more interesting like that. So that's my take. That's a lot of talking for me. So now I can throw it over to you guys for the close of the show and tell us what went down at WWE Stomping Grounds. Did you like it? Were you pleasantly surprised? What was your favorite matches and what has developed in the time since on Raw?
So, Kofi, you mentioned that we have to somewhat eat crow, and you're right.
I know, mostly jokes.
Neither of us really had expectations going to this show, but for the most part, it turned out to be really good.
Yeah, it was fun.
And it kind of served as a microcosm of what's going on in WWE right now, is you've got probably the best roster this company has ever seen mm-hmm. in terms of just pure talent.
Absolutely.
But the storylines kind of suck. They kind of lack any real depth, and they don't really tend to go anywhere. So when you had these matches that had no real build to them and just said, hey, you've got 12 to 15 minutes, go crazy, turns out those were the best matches of the night.
Yeah.
My pick was Ricochet versus Joe, and it had one episode of actual build. It was just, hey, you get a title shot, and I don't like you because I'm a big fat guy who has a title. And then they had a 12-minute match, and it was great.
Oh, so good. I mean, look, I'll watch Ricochet in pretty much any match, and he's going to be yeah. great. But I love Joe as well. Like, seeing them finally get a nice spot, a nice push in a pay-per-view was amazing. I mean, the same thing, you could say the same thing about my side. So I love that match, but I will say Heavy Machinery and Daniel Bryan and Rowan, that match was phenomenal.
Which had zero momentum.
Yes, nothing. And in fact, I'm amazed. People booed Otis.
Because they were in Washington, and that's Daniel Bryan's home country.
I know, but man, how do you boo Otis? Otis is amazing. Yeah. Otis is an awesome wrestler.
I would never boo Otis.
He has no neck. He has no neck, and he, like, dances, and he's this just massive powerhouse.
And stakes and weights.
He's awesome. Oh, he's so great. He's like my spirit animal. Anyway, continue.
Gonna get you a shirt that says,
no neck is your spirit animal.
I'm going to get you a shirt that says bulking season.
So anyway, yes, so it was. Those matches turned out to be, I mean, all the TV time over the last few weeks has gone to, like, Baron Corbin, and it's gone to the, and those matches lacked.
And the thing was, when the show started to fall off was right at the end when suddenly it became all about the story. You have Lacey Evans as the special guest referee, and she and Baron are doing everything in their power
yeah.
to try and get the title away from Seth, and it just ends up with Seth's got Becky in his corner because they're dating in real life. So,
which I know you don't. I know you don't love that.
I don't care for it because it kind of makes Becky just be Seth's boyfriend, or the other way around, just Seth just be Becky's. No, sorry, I have the genders mixed up here.
Oh, I thought that was intentional. I thought you were throwing shade.
No, that was
intentional. Yeah, I know what you're saying, though. Yeah. I understand.
How's it feel with the Chowskis moment, with a little Wachowski moment?
Hey,
he's been waiting.
Yeah, I know.
But no, I understand what you're saying. It doesn't bother me. I guess it never really bothers me, though, when, like, they'll use couples in storylines. I mean, mm-hmm. we've seen Nikki and John. We've seen Miz and Maryse. We saw Randy and Elizabeth. Like, it's been a hallmark of WWF and WWE. Like, they always do that.
I was just watching
the perspective on that. Yeah, that one has a great history behind it.
I'm saying, but they always do that. Like, it's one of the things that they feature, and it doesn't bother me. It's not necessarily a negative. My problem with that last match was that it dragged on for so freaking long.
And it absolutely buried Corbin in terms of having any credibility. And any that he had at all is suddenly gone. And what did they do the next night and made me groan so loudly was, hey, I bet you guys can't beat us in a mixed tag match. It's like, I wonder what's going to happen in 3 weeks when we have this match. The bad guys lost. Gee, who could have seen that?
What will happen is that Matt will be happy that night. Because Seth and Becky will win.
It's just, I wanted them to move on to something more interesting, their answer keeps being, no, we're going to stay with the least interesting thing possible.
I agree. No, and I don't know why that is. I don't know if that's maybe they don't have, they got like 80 writers, WWE. I don't know if maybe they don't have something set up yet for Seth's next program. I have no idea what they're waiting on because this is not entertaining. I'm only mildly entertained by this, by the way, and this is probably for a lot of fans, more mainstream fans probably. I'm more entertained by the fact that Seth, the whole couple angle is the most entertaining part of this feud. It has nothing to do with seeing, I don't care about Seth versus Corbin. I didn't care about that before. I'm mildly entertained that Becky and Seth are doing this one-off thing and featuring their stuff on WWE. That is the most entertaining part of this feud.
Now, speaking of Seth, how did you feel about his Twitter tirade? More of a crusade this weekend.
I love it.
Hey, we're the best pro wrestling in the world, and I'll fight anybody who says it.
I love feisty Seth. Seth's been feisty on Twitter. He's been a little spicy.
Like, I liked it.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Until he started calling out guys who stepped up and said, I could take it. Because then it's like, it's punching down.
But they didn't say they would take him.
No, because he goes, nobody can do what I do.
Yeah.
And I dare anybody alive to step up. And Ospreay, Will Ospreay from New Japan, regarded as one of the best in-ring guys in the world today.
Yeah.
Steps up and says, hey, I'm right here. And he goes after him and says, oh, we've got Ricochet. And, oh, I make more money than you. And it's like,
okay, the Ricochet line was good.
You're acting like you didn't come from the independent scene. You were raised in Ring of Honor.
But don't act
like suddenly that you're on the WWE side and you've planted the flag.
But I think
that none of the other stuff matters.
Here's the thing. I'm saying this like I'm not Dr. Phil. I can't see inside Seth Rollins' mind. So I'm saying this as a true outsider. I have no idea what he's saying. However, what it feels like is that it has been very popular to punch WWE. It's been very much a punching bag over the last few months to a last year. It's been frequent on social media to see all the negatives, to see it as this thing of like, especially with AEW moving into this thing. They're not true competition yet, but people look at that and they're very apt to not just praise AEW, they're very apt to say WWE sucks, AEW's great, and here's why. As a person who's traveling, right, however many days a year he travels, working his butt off in the ring. 300
days a year, 500 events.
I'm saying that would get annoying to me. I get annoyed by comments and stuff on Twitter, and I have a 0.3% of what he has to deal with on a day-to-day basis. I could see that getting on his nerves. I like that he's being a little edgy, just throwing it out there. It's okay. As we've seen from other wrestlers, superstars do this all the time. They'll blow off some steam, then it'll be fine. But I like it.
For me, it's fine to beat your chest. It's fine to believe that you are the best. You should believe you're the best, no matter what position you're in. Otherwise, why get out of bed in the morning?
Yeah.
Why strive to be any better? But
I agree.
Damn it,
here's the thing. When you start punching down, you start to look foolish. And that's where I feel like he tripped up.
Okay. I mean, the Ricochet line.
And in the end, it was just to get attention. And he got that.
He got
Congratulations.
It.
We're talking about it right now.
Absolutely. And we weren't talking about Seth's promos before this, so
exactly.
Just saying, that's great.
And now, speaking of other stuff we could be talking about, we got Fyter Fest this weekend, because you mentioned AEW.
I did.
And I just happened to be going to Fyter
Fest. Look at that. He's going to AEW.
I'm all excited for it. Now, I had you take a look at the card before we came on here. What did you think about this card, and what match are you looking the most forward to?
Well, I wrote it down, and then I
wrote it down.
I
then
dropped my card.
He's a professional, you see.
You
got official note cards.
I do. I actually like the Elite versus the Lucha Brothers.
Okay.
I think that's going to be
the 6-man tag match.
Yeah. I think that's going to be a fun. I mean, I would have gone. I think my first pick was your pick.
Okay.
Because that's, to me, that's the one that grabs me the most. But I think this one, just because of who it involves, it will be an entertaining match. It will be one of those matches that maybe doesn't like set the world on fire, but you'll be like, that was awesome. That's a 4-star or 5-star match, whatever your rating scale is.
Sure thing. So. For people that don't know, this show is taking place in Daytona Beach at the Ocean Center. It's free. It's not like the Double or Nothing pay-per-view from a few weeks ago.
It's awesome.
Cost $50. You just go on to BR Live, and it's absolutely free to watch. But the main draw of the show is a guy named Dean Ambrose. Changed his name back to John Moxley and is making his debut on the show. And he's going up against a guy that I would compare to a young Mick Foley.
Ooh.
In that this is a guy that is not afraid to absolutely sacrifice his body in the most obscene stunts possible. This is the guy that had a cigarette stapled to his forehead.
Oh, God.
During the Battle Royale in the first pay-per-view.
Ugh.
As soon as I saw these two guys in the same room, I said, oh, these two are going to kill each other. And they're not wasting any time getting to this match. They're going right into it. And there's going to be a ton of eyes on this show for that match alone.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you watched Double or Nothing, that ending segment with Moxley automatically just... Yeah, it was great. So, I mean, you already had me.
Going nuts. And
it didn't matter who his opponent was
going
to be, honestly, if we're being honest. But I'm really interested to see him go up against it.
So. And if you've watched his New Japan stuff in the time between then and now... Mm-hmm. He's got a little bit more bite to him, a little bit more of an edge.
Well, I can imagine.
No more wacky line clotheslines off the ropes.
Yeah, he doesn't. Like, I hated those.
I hated them too.
I was not a fan.
I think most people hated him. I think he did it once and then was told, you have to do that.
That's your move. That's your trademark move. Do it 80 million times.
And have Michael Cole scream, wacky line.
So that's Fyter Fest?
That is Fyter Fest. I'm excited. That is Saturday night. Streaming live on the BR Network, and we will be covering it live over at comicbook.com's WWE page.
Booyah! That is WWE as a whole, wrapped up in a bow, just for you.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, all right.
And your boy won.
Yeah, Kofi.
Still the champ.
Still the champ.
I saw that. That's what I said. You know, getting out of the bed in the morning. You just got to remember you're the champ. To quote the great film, Secret Life of Pet 2, when you're awesome and you just describe things, it sounds like bragging.
Panda. Panda.
And that's where we're going to end this episode.
I'm
so lost.
With
that enigmatic barking from Matt, we're going to end this episode.
Kevin Hart, snowball.
But before we get out of here, you guys have been doing the work of leaving us some great reviews of the show as we do our pitch. You can find new episodes of Comic Book Nation every Wednesday and Friday on comicbook.com, where you can find an RSS feed to subscribe to, so you can not miss any of our episodes, or you can subscribe on your favorite listening platform, iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Google Play, or you can tell any Amazon Alexa device to play Comic Book Nation podcast, and it will fire right up for you. If you leave us a positive review on any of these platforms, a positive five-star review, we will read them on the air sporadically and send you guys some comic book swag, which now includes the official Comic Book Nation t-shirt. So, in honor of that t-shirt, we are going to dip back in and read some of you guys' latest reviews and send these people some nice swag. So, if you hear your review read, be sure to hit us up on social media at the hashtag Comic Book Nation. We need to know your shirt size and your address. Don't put that out in public. Just hit us up and we'll tell you how to email us.
There you go.
And we'll get you some good Comic Book Nation t-shirts. So let's jump into this one. And let's see. I'm trying to say like where we stopped last time. I always mess it up and do repeats.
You only did that once.
No, yeah, it's true. That was only because that was one I read.
It was just funny.
We'll start with this. We got a 3-star review from some hater. I forget his name.
We read that one already.
Yeah, I know. We're not going to. I'm saying, Jim, thank you. We're going to start at this point as the last place we stopped because we already said that hater. We're not going to give him more shine. So, Comic Book Nation Rise by McGregor. After subscribing to CB.com on Facebook for some time, I finally saw an ad for the podcast. I immediately fell in love with the dynamic and variety the show offers. Kofi does an excellent job at wrangling the show along with honest and funny input, while BD keeps it realer than Dave Chappelle with great rants and raves. The rotating guest hosts are always funny and pleasant, always offer quality to every show. The best part is when the group goes on off on a tangent and the great debate ensues. Matt, that's you.
Why is that me?
Their views on the subject at hand. I can listen to their sibling-esque squabbles for hours if Kofi would allow it. Great chemistry between everyone on the show, and the variety of topics keep the show fresh. The special edition surprise episodes are also welcome additions. Only complaint I have is that the show isn't daily. This has definitely become my favorite new podcast, and will recommend anyone who loves geek culture and life culture for that matter, listen to this show, all caps, and to white thumbs up.
That's a
thorough, awesome review by McGregor.
If we had an applause button, that would get applause.
Yeah, if we had an applause button, that would get an applause. That is a great review, and you deserve a t-shirt. Here's the next one. Your one stop for the stuff that matters by the Jones 1234, the only place to go for everything you need to know about geek culture, from Marvel to Game of Thrones to Walking Dead to Disney. That's you again, Matt. The guys have it covered. Sometimes they'll throw in some anime and wrestling. Connor!
Dang right.
Which I'm not well versed in, but listening to all their conversation makes me feel like I'm ready to discuss all of the big topics of the week. Love the podcast. Must Listen by Mike James. Mike James. I got into podcasts recently, and this is the first one I found, but also the one I look forward to the most now that I have a list of a few I keep up on. Listening to it is like listening to a conversation you might have with your friends on all things comic-related. I used to spend a lot of time each day reading the latest comic-related news, but now I can just listen to this podcast while I'm driving to work and save my reading time for something else. Hey, we are here to help. Finally, a good podcast by Sam Heen 2099. Ooh, that's a deep cut. Awesome stuff, guys. Love all the content you cover. Keep them podcasts coming. Next one, and this one I really appreciate. Link's Awakening is the OG Game Boy game by Apps Rule 311. Love you guys. Keep up the good work. See, that is constructive criticism. Yes, we totally mistaked Link's Awakening a couple episodes ago. We were discussing it, thinking it was the second NES game. That's, I forget. Oh, man, I had
Adventures
that
of Link.
Adventures of Link. Thank you. And we confused it with the awesome Game Boy game. But this is why we have great fans. Constructive criticism. That man deserves a T-shirt.
Very
and true. The last one I will end on today, because we will have some more thorough and informative. I really enjoy this comic book pop culture podcast. Oh, by Little Parmigiano. I love that name. I really enjoy this comic book pop culture podcast due to its wide range of topics when it comes to nerd culture. Everything from films, universes, comic books, video games, and more. The core group works well together, even when bickering. Matt, there's you again. And make each episode fun so and entertaining, and the guests add to that each week as well. I always end up discovering new comics and content from your episodes. Thank you. No, thank you all for your kind reviews. We really do love you guys for that. It really, I mean, you know, it really does make us feel good and to get this feedback. So we appreciate what you do, and to show that, please, again, hit us up. Hashtag Comic Book Nation. We'll give you an email address, which I promise I won't air over the air again. But we'll send you guys some comic book swag once we get your shirt size and your address. So hit us up, and if you guys are a fan and you haven't yet left a review, please do, because we are going to go through these more often now. So that'll do it for us here at Comic Book Nation. We'll see you guys later on in the week. Deuces.